Okay, thank you very much indeed. I mean, how I came to be doing this, I really don't know, except that actually I offered it. So it's a sort of self-inflicted trouble that I've got myself into. But the background is simply that, for one reason or another, I was asked to give a talk like this to the students at Interspeech in 2007. So that was quite a large community of interested individuals, and having invested the time in preparing it, I thought it might be of interest to you guys. So here we go. Now, I'm not going to portray myself as any kind of real expert on this. I'm just going to hand over to you what I think are some really useful pointers and things that I've also researched myself. So it's not to really just how to give a good presentation. I mean, it's how to give a reasonably good presentation and not embarrass yourself, but to be able to communicate in a way that is appreciated by the audience and achieves your aims as a presenter and achieves the audience's aims as listeners who have taken the effort to come and sit and expect to take something away from what you're going to give during your own talk. So this is basically what I'm going to cover. I'm going to look at the why we give talks at all, say something about preparation, content, timing, style, all those kinds of things, a little bit about the technology, how to ready yourself for the purposes of giving a talk, something about the delivery process itself. In fact, I'm going to make an instant adjustment because I'm going to walk into this over and over again. Thank you. Something about how to actually deliver the talk, and then we'll say something about the post-mortem, about how to analyse what you've done at the end. Now, I put that up, of course, just to show that having a kind of overview at the beginning of the talk is a very good way of starting a talk, because that orients everybody to what it is you're going to cover, gives everybody a flavour of what might be of interest to them, gives them a chance to leave the room if they realise the whole thing's nothing to do, of no interest whatsoever. So why give a good talk? Well, there's a very good reason. It's much more fun to you as a speaker to give a good talk than a bad talk. Bad talks are incredibly awful experiences, and I hope you never have to go through that process of standing up there and realising it's all going horribly wrong. And that's what you want to avoid. There's some nice quotes here. Average talks are forgotten quite quickly. Great talks are remembered for years. But terrible talks are remembered forever. And, you know, you can be the end of your career sitting down and saying, God, do you remember that occasion when so-and-so famous person made a complete mess of it? That's taken from here. And by the way, that's another good idea.
Can I borrow your board, please?
Sure. Help yourself.
May I borrow it?
Yes. I didn't arrange for that to happen. So it's also useful when you're giving a talk, you're usually, if it's a scientific court, you're quoting other people's work. So have a means for giving references. This is what I use. I tend to highlight them like this, so they're very, very obvious. But it's you can all have your own style, but don't forget that in science, the work you're doing is always resting on the results of other people, so you need to give due acknowledgement all the way through. So here's another one. So why are we giving a talk? What is the purpose? What's the main idea? Well, one might be just to survive the whole process. Somebody's obliged you to give two York talks a year, and so you're going to have to stand up and do it. Of course, the main thing is to perhaps sell yourself. You're trying to promote, you may be in an interview situation, you're trying to promote yourself, your group, your institution, your field, depends who you're talking to, or an idea, an approach, a direction. Depending on the nature of the topic, will affect the way in which you prepare and deliver. But it's very important that you appreciate what it is, why you're giving the talk in the first place. And different audiences require different things. So, for example, a conference talk is very different from an invited seminar or a regular lecture. In a conference talk, which hopefully most of you will get to do, the audience is perhaps not so directly interested in what you're saying, because they may be there because they sat through the previous talk and they were too, couldn't be bothered to get up and leave the room when you started. Unfortunately, it's bad, you know, it would be nice to think everybody's there is interested in what you're saying. So what are you trying to do is basically sell your paper. You've got your paper in the proceedings, you want people to think, ah, I must mark his name down, I'm going to go and read that when I come out of the room. If you're just giving a lecture, then you're trying to explain something to something which is interesting, and you're trying to create in your audience a new understanding. So in the teaching situation, that's of course what we're doing there. That's very different from a scientific presentation, a lecture. As you're all familiar with sitting in lectures, the idea is to communicate something new and to create an understanding, a different insight into something which might be quite difficult for the person in the audience to get their head around. And if you're lucky enough to be invited to give a lecture, then that's another different style. But basically, you have an opportunity then, because you have this privileged position, to put over an idea which might be slightly unusual or slightly unpopular or slightly controversial. Or you're trying now to push your own research agenda, perhaps, onto an audience. This is your chance to say, everybody else in the field is wrong. I have this idea which is much better, and here's my evidence. So who are you talking to? Well, it's great. I can see here this all applies, right? It would be nice to think that when you're giving a paper or giving a talk that everybody knows all about you, they fully understand what it is you're talking about, so they just want this, all these nuggets that you're about to release to them, and that they're all sitting there just hanging on your every word. The reality, and you have to brace yourself for this, is that quite likely most of the audience don't have the foggiest idea who you are. They don't know much about what you're talking about. There might even be people there who are in the wrong session in the conference. And the worst situation, of course, if you have the dreaded post-lunch slot, then you've got people possibly right in front of you in the front row who can hardly keep their eyes open. This is very challenging to you as a presenter. So you have to be aware that this can happen and rise above it, because you nevertheless have the audience sitting there potentially influenceable by your talk. So you need to take the opportunity to convince them that what you're saying is of great value, which means the challenge is to wake up the person in the front row, right, and essentially make sure that at the end everybody goes out saying, well, gosh, I wish I was awake during that, because that really was quite good. I will now go and find out more about this person and what it is they're doing. And you've achieved a conversion, that which would be the aim. So, let's move to these various steps then. So, in preparing, what do you put in? Well, the important thing, of course, with a talk, it has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has to be a kind of a story. It has to be some logical starting point, some meat in the middle, something really important, and then it needs to come to a nice and natural end. I've seen people give talks where they just kind of stop because they run out of things to say. Well, that's it, I've had it. That's not a very tidy ending. It has to be a sort of rounded performance. It's a very good idea to just focus on one or two points. If you've got a complicated paper at a conference, you don't have to cover every single nuance of everything that you did in your presentation. If you can get over the one key idea, that is much better, and do that well, that's much better than giving a very quick race through all the different things that you did, because people think this person's just essentially disorganized, rather than selling your ideas and allowing them to go and see all the other wonderful things you did. Overviews and summaries. You saw at the start I gave an overview of what I'm going to be talking about. And you also have to balance the level of the content depending on the audience. Now this can very much depends on the context of the presentation, of course, as to what you expect the audience background knowledge to be. But you need to be consider that. You need to have introductory material for those that perhaps are interested but don't know the essential background, but you also need to have enough detailed material for those people who know it all inside out and want to be given the latest results. So a good balance between introductory and advanced material is quite important. What you don't want to put in is a lot of unnecessary detail. And this is quite difficult to judge, because when you're close to a piece of work, all you see is detail, and you sort of have to mentally step back, put yourself in the position of somebody sitting in the audience and say, well, I know all this stuff, but what do they need to know? And they don't need to know all the detail. They don't need to know which experiments didn't quite work. They just want to know the key results. What is the most important message that's coming out of this work that I've done? Now that's quite difficult to do, but if you don't provide all the detail, then don't worry, because people will probably ask, you know, how did you do that experiment, or what was this parameter setting? And then that's your opportunity to go into detail, because you've now been asked, so you have permission. But if you thrust detail on people all the time, people will be lost in the detail, and you'll run out of time. Now here's a dangerous one: equations. No, I'm looking at you because I'm expecting a little bit, some resistance here. But it depends on the field, but it's extremely dangerous putting up equations, because they do have an impact on the reaction in the audience. And some people just turn off instantly. They see a few equations. And a talk which is just going from one equation to another can be very, very difficult for anybody who is not right in the centre of the area which you're talking about. So it's a part of knowing your audience and understanding what it is that you're trying to communicate and who it is you're trying to communicate to. So as it says here, you know, what is the main message? What are you trying to get over? And how is what is the best way of communicating that? So, for a scientific talk, here's a kind of checklist. You want to introduce the problem that you've been working on. You've got to explain why it's interesting. There are a zillion problems out there, but only a few of them are worthy of investigation. So you need to justify why it is that you're working on a particular problem. People will expect you to show that you understand that you're not the first person in the world to have tackled this problem. And so you need to demonstrate that there are other giants whose shoulders you're standing on out there in the science. Then you can get into detail, specific problem, how you solved it, and then of course you need to explain the implications. So what is a question that sits in the mind of many audience members? So what? And so you need to answer that explicitly and explain why your particular result is of interest, not just to you, but to the people who've taken the trouble to come and sit and listen to what you're going to talk about. And then, of course, you can talk about what's left to be done. That's always nice to say, well, I didn't solve all the world's problems. There are just one or two that need to be looked at. I'm looking at these, or I hold them out for anybody in the audience to pick up and run with. Timing. Now, this is one which is a serious issue, because many conferences these days have very strict timed presentations. In my field, it's 15 minutes presentation, 5 minutes questions, and that's it. And it's absolute. There is absolutely no opportunity to run over, because there are multiple parallel sessions and people need to get from one session to another. So timing is rigorously enforced. you'd be amazed how long it takes to describe, or to cover just one slide. And I put here about 1.5 to 2 minutes per slide. So a 30-minute talk shouldn't really have more than 20 slides, 20 content slides, maybe 15 or less. And I would say that the perhaps the most common fault of someone who's just giving their first presentation is that they think they've got so much to say, they've got 50 slides, and they've got 10 minutes. I was tutoring on aerospace, and in aerospace they have to prepare talks in the first semester. It's always great fun saying, okay, you've got a 10-minute talk, how many slides are you going to use, or how many slides do you think you're going to use? And you get answers from, 10, 20, 40, something. No, what about 5? And they don't believe you. And then they give the talk and they're, blimey, where's the time gone? Some ideas here. Keeping track of your own time is quite important. So you see that I'm actually using the scheme here, slide 8 of 26. So you can see I've got a little bit of way to go. And you need contingencies. This is slightly difficult in PowerPoint, but you need to understand what you need to know what you've got. If you're running slow, then consider missing things out. And so have in mind how you might jump on a few. Just quickly say, I don't need to cover those. If you're interested, ask me, but I need to move along. Or what if you're running really fast? Then you can, again, have contingencies. Maybe have a few slides that you could slip in if you feel you have the time. It's actually very hard to do that on the fly, especially if the technology doesn't really give you easy ways of doing it. So I would recommend getting it right in the first instance. We'll come back to that in a bit, actually. So what about the style? The look of a presentation counts for quite a lot, I think. So it's this question of design, really. What's it's a bit of personal creativity, and being consistent is probably more important than anything else. Because if you're consistent, then it looks like it's planned. It's inconsistent, so you've got some slides in one colour, some slides in another layout, then it looks like you haven't thought too much about your talk. And if you look like the person who doesn't think too much about their talk, then maybe you're the kind of person who doesn't take too much care over their research either. So maybe these results that you're famously now delivering are a bit suspect, because you're as bad at your research as you are at preparing a talk. So all of this is related to the message. You mustn't go overboard with the technology. A lot of people, when they first encounter PowerPoint, have some mind-boggling choices made. The key is to get over your ideas, not what nice colour schemes you favour. Keep the slides simple. And of course, a picture is worth a thousand words. Diagrams, graphs, any kind of illustration is a really valuable part of a talk. Nobody wants to look at all these words on the screen. They'd really like to be looking at a picture. But beware, if you put a picture up or a graph, you're going to have to explain it. And that takes quite a long time. This axis is this axis is this, and then we see the curve going up and down, blah, 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 blah. And the background is suddenly you've spent 5 minutes on one graph. And maybe you've only got a 10-minute talk. So be careful. But figures and diagrams are much better. And of course, if you have graphs, then they need to be labelled. Now, when it comes to the technology, just a few practical things now about if you're going along to give a talk somewhere, what will you have available? Are you bringing along your own machine? I've got my own machine today. I knew in advance that I could plug it in once I'd been reminded. If you're going to use another machine, is that risky? How are you going to ensure that the presentation works beautifully on your machine is going to work perfectly on the machine that's provided? Again, in many conferences now, they have discovered, of course, a few years ago, it was an absolute nightmare people bringing their own machines, and half of a talk will be wasted watching somebody's system failing to boot up properly and not talking to the projector. So now, most conferences have You're not allowed to bring your own machine, and indeed you usually have to supply your presentation to a central server maybe an hour before your talk, and it's distributed, and so basically it's all hands off, so you have to know that it all works. And if you're using media, like audio or video, then you need to check that that all works. Nothing worse than standing up and saying, look at this fantastic video, this is the essence of everything that I've been talking about, this tells the whole story, click, nothing happens. That's very bad. Simple things like the resolution. Getting machines to talk with projectors these days is a little bit easier than it used to be, but nevertheless you can find yourself in a position where that doesn't work. Usually means you then have to do things like change resolution on your own machine. If you've never done that before, that can bring you out in a big sweat, and if there's nobody there to help you. So just trivial things like this, be aware what can happen, and prepare yourself, practice, figure out how to do it. I said consider recording yourself. Actually, I'm recording myself. I record all my lectures. And so if you're interested, you can have it afterwards in MP3. Download with the slides. Why would you record yourself in other circumstances? Well, for example, you might want to go back and review how you did. There might be some great questions which you couldn't quite remember. There's all kinds of reasons. You might have expressed something wonderfully about your research that you never managed to get on paper before, and you wish you had a record of it. Well, if you record yourself, then you do. This is just a cheap Sony digital recorder. That's very, very good. PowerPoint. So we've also already alluded to this. PowerPoint is a great scheme, but it has all kinds of issues which you can either fall foul of. So some simple ideas here. Only put single points on a line. The writing has to be big enough for people to see. It's amazing how many people don't seem to appreciate that. 18 point, by the way, is what is recommended as a minimum, an absolute minimum for slides. And yet you'll see people putting up things with lines and lines and lines of stuff they've maybe copied straight out their paper. Nobody wants to read that. The point about a presentation is it's a synthesis of key ideas. You're communicating with the audience. You're also reminding yourself what to say. So these are like prompts. But they need to be big enough. Use a template. If you don't feel that you can design your own slide, then there's plenty out there. Animations, great fun, can completely destroy a good talk. I haven't got time to tell you that. Ask me afterwards. And colour schemes. Don't go mad with colour. And be aware of people's perceptual ability to see colour. Don't put light green on yellow. Put something dark on yellow, or put something, yellow on dark blue. These are contrasting colours. This is highly visible. But yellow writing cannot be seen at all. And yet, I still see people doing this. So if you're going to use colour at all, think very carefully about it. Now some don'ts. So, this is self-explanatory. Don't use long paragraphs to spell out every last detail of the point, even though you believe everything in there is blah, blah, blah. Right. Nobody wants to read that. Nobody's going to read that. That's what the voice is for. You can say that. The point is just a succinct statement of what you're actually verbalising. I mentioned the tiny fonts. Don't use tiny fonts that no one can read. Don't go overboard with colour schemes. And extremely annoying. I will tell the story. So I was this guy was giving this is in a company. The guy was giving the budget sort of review, and it wasn't a good year. And so we had tragedy by the Bee Gees, right? He'd cut that out and attached that to every single bullet that he put up. Can you imagine? And we had a lot of bullets which weren't good news. Tragedy! it was a miracle that he got out of there alive, actually. I mean, we were really, everybody knew this was ready to lynch the guy. I mean, and he thought it was fun and illustrated the point. It just annoyed the hell out of everybody. Don't do it. There's some recent research. This is very, very recent. Just published the last few weeks. You'll notice I've been putting up single lines, because this is actually a style I quite liked, because it actually introduces the point, and it points in an interesting way. The reality is, the research shows, the learning experience, people's retention, is much better if you put it all up at once. So actually in all my lectures now, I've cut this out. So those of you who've been to my lectures, it's slightly different now. Because, interestingly, if you can read ahead as an audience member, you kind of know what's coming, and therefore you can absorb the verbal accompaniment better, and you remember it better. So even that form of animation, unless like I earlier was making a kind of joke, so I didn't want you to see certain things, then it's much better to present an entire slide's worth of information in one go, which is a brand new result. So, here's a great thing. I just had to put that in, right? That's not mine, that's from these guys. But, you know, you see all of these things. PowerPoint gives you the power to do that. And unless they illustrate travelling wave, then there's no purpose whatsoever in a talk. Right, logistics. Preparation before and on the day. Surprisingly, I would always recommend you don't prepare too far ahead, because there's a danger that perhaps you then have a period where you're not looking at the presentation, and then you come to give it and you realise you can't quite remember what's in it. Or it's become incredibly stale because you've practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced, and now you're not really presenting in a sort of spontaneous style. It's become a kind of, you've turned into a tape recording. Rehearsing is good. You can rehearse on your own. You can rehearse in front of friends. It's always good to do a little bit of fine-tuning just before, because just before, your mind becomes very focused on what's just about to hit you. And you realise that certain points you're not maybe making in the best possible way. So, no problem with those last minute tweakings, but be aware that in some conferences, as I say, you have to deliver your talk 1 or 2 hours beforehand. Don't prepare the whole thing 1 or 2 hours beforehand, but certainly do some fine tuning. It's a very good idea to be well rested before you give your talk. If you've been up partying the next day, you're giving your first ever paper. You're not going to be in the best physical condition. So some trivial stuff. You've got to know where to go. You've got to get there in good time. You need to know what the setup's going to be. Test it out. Mentioned that before. Backup copy. Actually, today I've got a whole separate computer here, just in case this one failed to talk to the projector, which it did in my lecture the other day. If you are nervous before your talk, that is good. If you're completely relaxed, that is probably not so good. That's probably slightly dangerous. It means you're likely to be a bit casual. It means you're not fully engaged with what you're about to do. So being nervous, although that's not very comfortable, not very enjoyable, I would say that is a very good sign that you're about to deliver a really good talk. And go to the toilet. Okay, so we've covered motivation, preparation, and now to say a few words about delivery. And I put that up because that's a very good way of orienting people halfway through a talk, to show them where you are, in case they've forgotten that you're actually on a journey here, from a beginning through a middle to an end. So I'm reminding you that we're working our way down and giving you some assurance that we're actually going to get to the end, and this will all be over soon. So, what to do with various parts of your anatomy? What to do with your body? Don't stand in front of the screen and don't move about too much. Now, I'm actually moving about quite a bit here. But you'd be amazed at the people who give talks, you know, like this, and sort of basically blocking the view, or who spend the time pacing up and down, up and down. Particularly bad in G30, by the way. If you're ever in G30 giving a talk, don't move at all, because the floor is so creaky. I know that presenters don't seem to notice it, but for the audience, it's horrendous. So you just stand, the presenter's standing there, and it's can't hear what they're saying. It's really, really bad. So, you know, move about a bit, but don't do a marathon. Hands. What on earth do you do with your hands? There's a lot of things not to do with the hands. Some people point with the cursor, like doing this kind of thing. That's very tricky. And also, if you've got anything which is sensitive to actions of a click, like going on to the next slide, if you're slightly nervous, before you know it, you've got to the end of your talk. And then you've got to figure out how to get back. I've also seen people say, well, as you can see, no. This is what you need to be pointing at. This is what people can see. You've got to put yourself in the mind of the audience. Sticks are good, laser pointers are even better. But I've also seen audiences kind of ducking while somebody's just generally talking with a laser switched on. And, you know, that is a bad thing. So don't wave it around. Be friendly. You might be internally really nervous, absolutely petrified, but you want to radiate some sort of confidence. And be visible. You know, there's no point giving a talk like this. It's not very polite, but people in my field will appreciate, you get 12 dB signal noise gain by seeing somebody's lips. That is huge. And you can even understand what someone is saying in a noisy environment, only seeing their lips. So, you know, be visible, make sure that people can see you and can follow what you're saying. What to do with your eyes? Look at everybody in the audience. If you're kind of radiating nervousness and, oh, I don't really know, then that kind of unsettles the audience. Again, if they think that you're not so confident to even look at them, they maybe think, well, maybe he's not so confident about his results. Maybe there's, you know, a whole underlying suspiciousness to what's going on here. So keep contact with, but don't focus on one person and give the whole talk to them, because not only will they feel very uncomfortable, but the rest of the audience suddenly feels left out. You know, what's special about this person? Why, you know, maybe it's his wife. Why is he not communicating with me? So you basically got to sort of scan the room, be inclusive, and keep everybody involved. And what to do with your voice? Well, obviously you have to speak clearly. You want to mumble, you want to speak at a reasonable volume. You don't want to shout, that's difficult. You're speaking to the audience, not to the screen, because this is a communication. The people sitting in the seats are the people that you're trying to have a relationship with. You are not communicating with your own work. You're communicating with the audience. Don't speak very fast. And this is particularly true, of course, now. If it's an international conference or even teaching here, many people's language is not necessarily the language that you speak, and so it's actually quite stressful to follow a very fast talk in a language that you're not native in, and speakers really need to take account of that and be lively. In other words, you want to make it, as it hopefully is, an enjoyable, lively experience. Don't talk on a monotone. It's a drone. That's guaranteed to put people to sleep. If you are engaged with your talk, then your audience will be engaged with your talk. Okay, a few more things about style. Now, as you'll notice, I'm speaking spontaneously, more or less. But some people find that very, very difficult, especially if you don't have a lot of experience giving talks. So although it's better to try to talk off the top of your head than to read, sometimes, maybe it's a very, very important talk, it's better to have a script. In which case, you need to write that script as if it was the spoken form. The spoken form and the written form are very different. And if you haven't appreciated this, now is the time to grasp that idea. Because if you want to present in a way which is acceptable, but you need that script, then you need to go in and edit it, and even put in, like it says here, put in okays and so's, which seems a bit weird, but if you think of it as a theatrical performance, then you will gradually realise that you can do it without script, because it's a natural style of talking. If you've ever been unlucky enough to see someone literally reading their paper, it is the most desperately dull thing, because the written form is not is not appropriate to being delivered by voice, and people find it extremely uninteresting. So that's how to speak. What not to say? So you don't need to hold out all your problems, you know, put all your dirty washing in public. If things didn't go well, don't say it. Don't draw attention to things you don't want people to ask questions about. Not everything that one does in research works perfectly. So draw attention to the highlights, the things which did go well. Nobody wants to hear, well, you know, these results aren't as good as I wanted, and you know, it's all gone horribly wrong. And they're all thinking, well, why are you here then? Private remarks and jokes. It's good to be humorous, as I hope I'm illustrating, but the worst thing is if there's a kind of a private joke that only a couple of people in the room know. And this can happen, I've seen this happen in conferences, where there's, you know, the front row's got all the big wigs, they've come up to the front, and they know the speaker, and then the speaker makes some joke because there's some shared context. And everybody else immediately is left out. They just suddenly think, I'm not in the club, what's happened here? So, you know, avoid that kind of thing. You're sharing with everybody in the room, so you have to have that in your mind. It's between you and the complete audience, not between you and just one or two people. I don't need to say all of this. Timing, I've mentioned, is absolutely critical. Not just from the point of view of, in conferences, having fixed amounts of time, but it's actually really rather rude to overrun your allotted time, because you're basically saying, although I was given half an hour, then I'm so important I can go over by 10 minutes, and nobody, you know, who's going to stop me? And you're putting everybody ill at ease. You're screwing up some timing that's pre-arranged. Some food might be going cold. And you're putting the chairperson in a really difficult position. The chairperson is supposed to keep control of time. And they're now thinking, God, this is such a senior person. Dare I stand up and stop this guy when he's clearly only halfway through? And I have seen that happen, and it's extremely difficult for everybody. The responsibility is on you as the presenter to get it right. So a few words about technology. I won't dwell on this because it's kind of obvious, because I also want to save a little bit of time here. But you obviously have to know how to work this stuff. Sometimes a microphone, in a big room, microphones are provided. I find them really great because I know some people are frightened of microphones, but personally I find it actually gives me a boost in confidence, because somehow hearing your own voice, it's almost like somebody else is doing the talking. So it's a kind of weird effect. So it can be quite good, but where is it is rather important. On some occasions you might have a lectern and the microphone is here, which is great, but if you're the kind of person who wanders away and comes back and then is talking again to the microphone, that's not so good, right? Same sort of thing with a handheld mic. You'd be amazed how many people don't know how to use a handheld mic, you know, to hold it in front of your mouth, for example. They'll start saying, well, if we look at this, it doesn't work. Okay. Right, so now, the timing, I mentioned about how long it actually takes to do a slide. The reality is that during a presentation, the clock somehow gets a life of its own. And it's amazing. Time just goes. It's all over in a flash. You can't believe it. So you've got to keep track of it. Which means that if you're to keep control of your own talk, you need to be the one who's paying attention to the time. Now, I noticed when I came in here that clock's actually stopped. So I've got my own watch here so that I can keep track of what's going on. You also need to know who the chairperson is and keep an eye on them in case they are getting pretty desperate to get out the hook and pull you off. I've again seen in conferences chair people going absolutely desperate because they just can't attract the eye of the speaker, and they're waving signs and they've got big, no minutes left, and the person is sort of mentally completely oblivious. And the audience, I mean, it's fantastic for the audience. The audience love it. They want to see what's going to happen next. But it's not really the point. Okay. Right, so, questions. Really two options. Do you allow interruptions in your talk, or do you have it all at the end? Well, it depends. It kind of depends on you. It depends on the context. So in seminars, it's quite usual to allow interruptions. That's very good, because in the middle of a flow, something comes up, you say something, somebody's immediately got a question, and they need an explanation. And that's very interactive, and that's good. The danger is that you can immediately lose control. So all your beautiful planning in terms of timing, suddenly out the window, when you're deep in a conversation with someone on something really interesting, 5 minutes of your 15 minutes talk has gone. And recovering from that can be quite difficult. So, the strategy, of course, is to maybe engage for a little bit, but then say, we should take that afterwards, or that's so interesting, we'll have a discussion about that later on. If in a conference situation, then you typically don't allow interruptions, in which case it's all at the end. And that means it's up to you to leave enough time for questions. If you don't leave enough time, you're not going to get any questions. For some people, I know people who actually talk right up to the end of question time, precisely because they don't get questions. But if you want questions, then you need to leave enough time, otherwise you ain't going to get them. Handling questions is actually quite tricky. Some people in the audience are very eloquent and can come up with a beautifully crafted question. Other people, have just as much trouble expressing themselves as I do. So they, maybe ask two or three questions in a long and rambling sentence, and you're there thinking, what? I don't know, I can't follow any of that. And then you have a choice. So do I say, I couldn't follow that, do you want to ask it again? Time's going. And you have to appreciate that this is a situation which needs careful management. A good trick, which it mentions here, is if it's a hard but interesting question and you haven't quite got your answer in mind but you're thinking about it, a good strategy for giving yourself a little more time to think is to repeat the question, or what our friend here is asking is da 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 da. Meanwhile, your brain is computing an answer. Figuring out how to do that is quite useful. Saying that you don't know is perfectly fine. If you don't know, you don't know. For never make up answers. Never pretend that you know if you don't know, because you'll just basically dig a bigger and bigger hole for yourself, and you'll have a reputation which you will then have great difficulty shaking off. And then I'm not sure whether to put this one up, but it is a trick. If you're really struggling, politicians do this, you answer a different question to the one that was actually asked. And that puts the pressure back on the questioner. Two things there. One, it gives you the chance to say something that you want to say. And there is a very good chance the questioner will back down and you can move on. Okay. So all the way through, you want to smile, as I mentioned, but you don't want to look crazy. Be calm. Breathing. This comes with practice. If you're really nervous, it turns out that breathing becomes quite a challenge during a presentation, and you can soon run out of breath. And I've seen people hyperventilating. That is not nice. That just needs practice. You need to keep calm, and you will have a lot of sympathy in the audience, so you don't need to worry about that, but it is something which comes with practice. So you need to be confident, enthusiastic, amusing, committed, and honest. Always say it as it is. So when it's finished, what can you do? Apart from going and have a great drink or something. It's always good to learn from one's own experiences, because hopefully you will give more than one talk in your life, and you always want to improve. If you had a reasonable experience the first time, it would be good to have a much better experience the next time. Also, of course, what is a good way of learning about presentations is to observe other people giving talks and presentations. If you go to conferences and see people giving talks, why did you like this talk? Why didn't you like that talk? What are people doing? You can adopt some of the strategies that you're seeing other people do. And you're not going to die. You're going to get through it. At the end, you'll come out, you'll have survived, and hopefully you've learned something. So, this is what I've talked about. Gave you some motivation, talked about how to prepare, said something about how to deliver a talk, and a little bit about learning from your experience. And this is, of course, a good way to come to the end of a talk by reminding everybody what it was, what journey we've been on together. If you want to know more about this, I recommend a couple of nice web resources, some of which I've been quoting. So there's places you can go to find where people have done research on how to do the give good talks. That's where I'm going to end. Thank you very much, and I'm quite happy to take any questions.
Okay.